EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's American 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls?
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Hello everyone and welcome to the show. How are you all doing? I'm Nick Hunter and you're listening to UFO Chronicles podcast. Our first guest tonight is Ethan from South Dakota, and Ethan's UFO sightings occurred on 2 consecutive Saturdays in 2017. He witnessed an egg-shaped and semi-transparent craft that would hover and travel at great speeds. Then we head due east to New York State to hear about Eileen's multiple UFO sightings in upstate New York in the early 1980s, when Eileen and her husband witnessed a very large craft, a sighting which coincided with the Hudson Valley UFO sightings. But first, I want to tell you about an interesting podcast I've been listening to and enjoying. It's called What Was That Like Podcast. It's first-hand true stories from real people in unreal situations. With titles to episodes like Dan Was Mauled by a Grizzly Bear, James Spent 35 Years in Prison, Diana Who Survived a Plane Crash, and Whitney Was Shot 12 Times. And these stories are not the podcast host talking about what happened. Each episode features the guest, the person who actually experienced the situation, telling the story of what happened firsthand. Scott, the host, just gets out of the way and lets the guest tell their story. Not a lot of interruptions, just the way we like it. Many of the stories include the actual 911 call audio that was made from the scene of what happened. The episodes cover a wide variety of topics. Some are true crime related, such as someone who experienced a mass shooting or a home invasion. Others are more lighthearted, such as the guy who talked about winning over $100,000 on Wheel of Fortune, or Dan who biked to the South Pole. Now, I listened to Dan's account yesterday. It was really compelling and some serious human endurance. I suggest you go have a listen and check out this podcast. What Was That Like? The podcast can be found on any podcast app, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or at the website whatwasthatlike.com. Hello, Ethan, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Nick. Nice to be here.
It is great to have you come on today, and you're calling from South Dakota.
Yes, sir.
Now, Ethan, you have UFO experience to share with us from 2017. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please?
All right. I live in a very rural community out here in the southeast corner of the state, and I'm from a town of about 300 people called Wakanda, and there is a town approximately 2 miles to the east and about 8 miles to the north of me called Vyberg. And in 2017, the Vyberg movie theater had its 125th anniversary of being open. Vyberg is a town of about 800 people. So that movie theater is run completely on a volunteer basis. And even when you have to pay to go there, it's usually like $4 for an adult and you get pop and chips and everything for less than $10 usually. But because of Viber having their anniversary, it was free to get in on Saturdays in the summer, and they're actually showing classic movies. So my girlfriend and I took a trip up there one day. We went and saw Jaws in theaters, but they were playing it pretty late at night, so we didn't end up actually leaving Viber till about 10 or 10:30 that night. And she was pretty tired, and she actually ended up falling asleep, I think, before we even hit the edge of town. But I was driving south, and we're on the highway, and I'm going along, and the road is 65 miles an hour, and I look up, and there's what I could best describe as an egg. And it looked as though it was trying to camouflage itself. Like, you could see the silhouette of it, and it kind of looked like a piece of glass where the stars were refracting off of it. And on one end of this, like the pointed end of an egg, had a green light. And then on the bottom side towards the back end was a white light, and both of them were unblinking. And I thought initially I was seeing some kind of an optical illusion that had to be a plane. But I thought, well, if it was a plane, it probably had red lights. And also the lights were, if this was a plane and it was that far away in the sky, the lights were really far away. So it wouldn't have made any sense. But I happen to know that you could see, like I said, it was just kind of floating. And it looked like it was about the size of a small car. And as I saw it and I came up on it closer, it somehow managed to stay equidistant from my car the whole time as I was driving down the road. And it was probably about 100, 150 feet in front of me. And it looked like it was about 50 feet off the ground. And my girlfriend's sleeping in the passenger seat, and I turned down the sound. I'm trying to wake her up. And as I'm doing this, the object floats over the road directly in front of me. Now, this is a straight north to south road. And as it's staying that same distance in front of me, I'm trying to rouse her, and it takes off straight south over the horizon. And I had the windows down. There was no sound at all coming from this thing. Only sound was my car engine. And where we live here in South Dakota is very flat. And I could see, you can actually see the hills that are the other side of the Missouri River that are in Nebraska, probably 20 miles away. I mean, they're tiny. They're just a line on the horizon. But I watched this thing go until it cleared those hills. And I've experienced, you know, when you're driving at night, persons get pretty tired and you see things. But I wasn't having any kind of symptoms like that, you know, that normally go with that kind of thing. But in my head, I kind of dismissed it. I woke her up and it was gone, so she'd never see it. I just kind of talked myself out of thinking I saw what I saw and kept going. And I never really told anybody about it. And then that next week, it was the next Saturday after this, same day of the week, same time of night, I was with a friend of mine, and we were going out to his house, and he lives on that same north to south road, but when you're coming from Viberg, you actually hit an intersection where it's another highway, and if you continue going south on that road, it turns to gravel. So when you're going to Wakanda from Viberg, you turn onto that highway and it'll take you to another one 2 miles over, and that'll bring you on pavement all the way home. But my friend and I, he lived another 2 miles south of Wakanda, but as I said, on that same road, we were pulling into his house. And when you're coming to that intersection, he lives like immediately when you're coming at it from the east and you turn to go south, his house is about another 100 feet down from that intersection. So you turn, and then you turn right into his driveway. And as we turn into that intersection, there's telephone poles right on the side of the road. And I look up, and there it is. That same exact object was floating. And it's weird the way the lights, as I said, the green and the white light, it looks, any way you were looking at this object, it looked like you were looking at it from the same exact angle, the way that white light was on the bottom. And this, the object is floating above the telephone pole, and you know, it's probably a 30, 40 foot pole, 20, 30 foot pole maybe, but it's like 10 feet above it. And my friend who's driving the car sees it too, and he slows down. What the explicit noise is that? I said, I don't know, man, but me and Mary saw it last week when I was coming home from movie theater. And he goes, I've never seen anything like that in my life. And I said, let's just get to your house. You know, I don't know what to think about this thing, but as we're, you know, this whole thing's happening, we're literally, as we're just making the turn, it's a 10-second conversation. And that thing is, or the object is doing the same thing it was doing when I was on the highway, where it's staying the same amount of distance from the car, but this time it's like 50 feet in front of us, 30 feet in the air. And we pull into his house, and now it comes right over top of us, but just to where you can see it out of the windshield. So it's like 20 feet in front of us. And I hover there for 15 seconds, and my friend and I are just completely in shock. And we're looking at it, and nobody's saying anything. All of a sudden, it just like last time, it takes off in a straight line, straight south, never to be seen again. Those two incidences were the only time I've ever seen anything of this nature in my life. But I really hope if anybody out there wants to, you know, relay it to you, if they'd ever seen anything similar to it, because it leaves me with questions for sure. I don't think I've ever heard another UFO report that saw a similar craft, but that's seems to be pretty par for the course with UFO reports. So yeah, that's pretty much my whole story.
And you say it was about the size of a car.
Yeah. Probably about like a VW bug, really. It's pretty small.
It's pretty small. And a green light and a white light at the bottom.
Yeah. And it's, the size of the light was like not much bigger than a star. I mean, it was about like the size of Venus in the night sky. Just brighter than your typical star, really.
Well, the area where you first saw it, is it just farmland?
It's actually it's a paved highway that comes straight south from that town. But, so it was in the middle. It was probably, it was June. So there's 6 foot tall corn on both sides. And that's all you really had to look at. But when you're coming out of Viberg like that, as I said, you can see the horizon. You can see down to Nebraska. It's kind of on an uphill from there. So you can see really far from that, in that direction, as you're looking straight south. I mean, I'd like to say I have some kind of theory on it. I have two theories that really, I think, pertain to it. I think I was in the right place at the right time. I don't feel personally like whatever this was looking for me or keeping any kind of tabs on me. I think I just happened to be in the right places at the right time, because as it happened the same time of night, 1 week apart on the same day, I like to think that whatever it was, because of the kind of camouflage it was displaying, where it wasn't really like black, it looked like you were looking through like a funhouse mirror kind of. I think it might have been some kind of acuity test, like visual acuity for this craft to see if whoever was looking at it could see it. But that being said, I also like to think that it might have been military, in my opinion, because it's the most advanced plane the United States military has ever disclosed, was like 50 or 60 years ago with the A-12, I'm pretty sure. Or the, can't remember what it's called, but my point being is that as much money gets poured into our military, I'm sure they've come up with something along the lines of being pretty near impossible or silent. The only thing I couldn't really explain is I don't think anything man-made could move that fast, because it would be traveling from zero to beyond supersonic instantaneously. I can't really explain it away there, but I'm also about 0% sure of what I saw, really, other than that I did see it.
It would be interesting if anyone else, I know it's not a very heavily populated area, but it'd be interesting to know if maybe anyone else has seen it.
Yeah, and then I heard on one of your recent episodes talking about how you can go on the MUFON website and they can look at reports that happened in the same time or place that you might have seen something, the person might have seen something. And I haven't made an account on there yet, but I actually intend to see if anybody else in my area saw anything around that time.
And also, yeah, the National UFO Reporting Center as well. That's nationwide.
I will definitely look into that as well then too.
Yeah, it's handy. I mean, it's not just really just for raising an investigation. It's more to do with being able to check to see, you know, did anyone else see this?
I mean, we're all of us They're looking for the truth. I mean, I guess that's the important part, right?
Yeah, that's it.
As I said, I like to think of myself as pretty skeptical, but there's actually the only real incident in history that I find completely captivating was the Washington UFO flap. Like that, when I think of UFO stuff, I think that's the undeniable burden of proof right there.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
But, you know, that was America's largest military press conference post-World War II to that point happened Sunday, after the second Saturday that happened, where the Air Force came out and said, we don't know what that was. And that's, you know, people, all this UFO disclosure stuff that happened with the Tic Tac and Go Fast and Gimbal and stuff, that's great. But if you want to look for the first time the government kind of admitted that it believed in UFOs, I think 1952 is a good place to start.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree with you.
That's just my favorite. But.
And how do you feel about disclosure? I mean, it's something which has been in the press quite a lot over the last 2-3 years.
That's a great question. I'm actually really glad you asked it. I'd love it if this made it onto the episode. I believe that the government, our government in particular, would not disclose any information that didn't put them at some kind of strategic advantage. And that isn't military exclusive. That is anything that they put their hands into. They're not going to do anything that's not to their benefit at all. I think it's a great way to diverge attention from certain things to other things. Anytime they're going through a big scandal, they might release another video. Now, however, that, you know, I believe the videos are genuine. I believe David Fravor, and if any of the other Navy pilots want to come forward, but I don't think that they're doing it for our benefit. I think that they're doing it for very selfish reasons that they would let go of these videos, because whoever, you know, if like Bob Lazar is to be believed and we have the craft at our disposal, whoever cracks the code first is going to be big dog on the block as far as world powers go. I think like in Bob Lazar's case though, if, like, I always tell people this, the only thing I find really compelling about his, I like to hear him talk about it because obviously he's a propulsion's genius compared to the average layman. But what I always like to say to people is it took an apple falling on somebody's head for us to conceptualize gravity. That's how little we know about it. And that happened 250 years ago. We are infants in this realm. If we could figure out how to manipulate gravity into a propulsion system, I mean, that being said, I think our concept of gravity would ultimately shift as to what it is and what we can do to it. But I think that would open a door not seen since probably wireless internet. That's a real Pandora's box, and it would be a child figuring out a jet engine, essentially. Actually, I had my high school math teacher. He was in the Air Force for 25 years. He's a colonel, and he actually worked at our, I think it's Ellsworth here in South Dakota. It's over on the other side of the state. But he had worked there for a considerable amount of time, and I know he said he was in command of some fleet. But I once asked him if he had ever been to Area 51, and he kind of gave me a, good, the school's that information. He's acting real goofy about it. And then I said, have you ever been to S4? And he turned pretty gray. He didn't talk about it anymore. But I don't know if he ever actually did see it, but the way he was acting, he kind of switched subjects really quick when I said that.
So I wonder.
Well, he had retired from the military to come teach kids in a podunk town math, and he meanwhile had like 4 or 5 degrees in mathematics, and I know he had told us at one point that he actually specialized in propulsion technology at some point in his career.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
So I wonder if he had maybe, you know, been contracted and done a little bit of work.
Yeah.
A few equations.
He was definitely, he had a very big fondness for the military. I don't think he would ever disclose it if he had actually had anything to do with S4. But I can't say that he did or didn't. It was just kind of a funny look he gave me. And then he proceeded to teach us whatever geometric equation we were learning. So
I've had a few reports of egg-shaped object. I did have someone message me a while ago, but this is in Wales, so this happened in the 80s. but it reminds me of the Zony Zamora incident in New Mexico.
I don't think I'm familiar with that one.
So this guy is a police officer. Lonnie Zamora, his name was, and it happened in 1964, Socorro, New Mexico.
I will have to give that a look.
He was a police officer that came forward and he said, you know, he had this experience in the desert, and of course nobody believed him.
That's always so fascinating to me that a police officer would come forward with that kind of thing and someone would be skeptical. But it's in our nature that if you know you don't see it, it's hard to believe. But like, I had heard somewhere that commercial pilots were like the number one reporter of UFO incidents and some demographic. I don't know what kind of metric they were being measured by, but the commercial airlines actually discouraged them from reporting.
That's right. Yeah, it's like the Japanese Airways, the pilot that made the report, and he was threatened with, you know, if you continue reporting this, then you'll be flying a desk.
That's so crazy. Yeah, you know, they don't let dummies fly planes.
No, that's true. Yeah, that is true.
I came when I was living in Billings, up in Billings, Montana. I came home for that Christmas, and I actually happened to run into a pilot who was from a town 20 miles away from me called Yankton. And he happened to be catching the same flight home as me just as a passenger. And I asked him if he ever saw any UFOs. He said, I have not. He's a young guy. He's probably about 30. He says, I have never seen one. But he goes, I actually asked that to a lot of the pilots I fly with. And he said, about 4 out of 5 times they have.
Right.
This is wild. But imagine, you know, how many of those go unreported?
A lot, because, you know, if it could be possible that you're going to risk your career, then, you know, you're just not going to report it, are you?
Absolutely, but you might say it to the guy sitting next to you one day.
That's right. And imagine, you know, you spend more time up in the air than anything, then, you know, you're going to see stuff sooner or later.
For sure. Oh, yeah. Well, I heard you say the other day on an episode that someone was given their account and they said, I don't know if this doesn't sound credible, or they said something along those lines. And he said, hey, this is your perception of an incident that happened to you. So, I mean, me as a listener, like, there was a lady on the other day, that skunk ape episode, I kind of had to have a laugh at that one. But I understand that sentiment, though, is if you see these things and nobody believes you, because, like, I've told my story and no one believed me, it means a lot to have someone who wants to listen. So keep up the good work out there.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. And I think that's why the show's getting successful it is now.
Congratulations. Well, I tell you what, the way you deliver, I love the intro, I love the outro, I love everything. You got a great style of doing it. Like, but if you ever decide to branch into anything else, I'm sure it'd be just as successful, as long as you got enough material to go off in that sense. So
yeah, someone said to me about, why don't I have like Lou Alessandro or Nick Pope and all that, about doing like a sister show? But it wouldn't be worth it, because because this show is super, trust me, I do work hours on this show, and that would mean if I have another show, that would be half and half. So you'd only be 50% of this show, and it just wouldn't be worth doing. And I wouldn't want to stretch myself out and only put in 50% into one show and then 50% in the other. It just wouldn't be worth it. I'd rather put everything into the one show.
Well, absolutely. Well, I appreciate the way you do it, that you're, you know, this is everybody's story. Anybody who's got a story. I think you nailed it with premise, for sure, and delivery.
Thank you, man. I like that. I like hearing. I love the feedback.
I'm going to wish you a happy night.
Ethan, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Thanks for having me. It's been great talking to you. Keep up the good work. Live long and prosper. Keep your stick on the ice, and good night, everybody.
It was my pleasure. All right, you take care, Ethan. Keep in contact.
All right.
All right. Take care of yourself, Ethan. Great talking to you.
You too, Nick. Bye.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange. Hello, Eileen, and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
Great to have you come on and join us today. And you're calling from upstate New York?
Yes, I'm in the mountains of Virgil, New York at a ski resort, and it's snowing like crazy.
I've heard about the weather. You're getting all the snow at the minute.
Yep, it's going to be about a foot of snow. So I'm looking forward to snowshoeing tomorrow.
Good stuff. Wrap up warm.
Yeah. Oh, I do. Believe me, I'm just like a snowman. I mean, like a I don't know what you call it, somebody who's just wearing multiple layers, an astronaut.
Wonderful. Now, Eileen, you're going to be sharing a couple of your UFO sightings.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to start the very first one, please?
Sure. Yes. Okay. This was in the summertime on Long Island in New York State at night. My husband and I were driving back from a weekend on the island to our apartment in the city. And I was sort of reclined in the passenger seat. We had a very strange little car that looked like a giant green turtle. I forget. I think it was called an AMC Pacer, and it had a giant moonroof. So I was reclining, looking up at the stars and waiting for the traffic to clear because everyone coming home on a Sunday in the summer from Long Island, it was just kind of a parking lot. And we got to a place called Little Neck, Long Island, just before we were going to turn to get to a bridge to Manhattan. And I was just looking up, just lazing, you know, in the chair. And all of a sudden, there weren't any stars. And I thought, maybe it's a cloud. I don't know. But I noticed I saw some lights above me and these strange, they looked like pipes of some kind, like kind of twisted together underneath. It was kind of a battleship gray color. And I thought, well, that's weird. Is that a blimp or something? So I opened up my window and stuck my head out to get a better look. And it was this huge, I mean, I couldn't even see the ends of it. This giant thing with all these tubes on the bottom of it. And there were a few lights and it was completely silent and very close to the ground. It seemed like it was just above the telephone poles. And I was just, you know, thunderstruck. I didn't know what it was. And I turned to my husband and I pointed upward and said, look. And he looked up briefly and went, uh-huh, and was totally unimpressed and kept driving. And I thought, well, I know it. I'm not nuts. I'm seeing this thing. And then we turned right to go to the bridge and that thing, whatever it was, kept going straight. I didn't see it anymore. And when we got to the apartment, I, of course, thought it was going to be all over the news, this giant, you know, bizarre thing. And there was nothing, which surprised me. And the next day when my husband was reading the Times, he showed me a page, you know, several pages in that talked about these sightings in the Hudson Valley the night before, giant, you know, seemingly UFOs, things that they couldn't explain. And I said, well, that must have been it. It ended up there. It wasn't very far from there when I saw it. And that really spurred me on to read up on UFOs. And I read about, you know, Bud Hopkins and Willie Strieber and watched all these UFO programs and Project Blue Book and Hynek and all that, because I wanted to understand what it was that I might have seen. And I read that and researched. There were a lot of people that saw these giant things. And so I felt somewhat vindicated, but very curious about what they could possibly be. Something that's that big that makes no noise at all. So bizarre. So that was the first one. And the second sighting was, this was in the 80s in the first one. The second one was in 2011 in the summertime in July, upstate New York. It was in a place called Watkins Glen, which is on Seneca Lake in New York. It was at night. I was coming home. It was about 10:30 at night. I was coming home from a family reunion dinner. My family has a reunion there every summer. And I was alone in the car, and I was driving back to our place in Virgil, where I live now in New York. We retired up here 2 years ago. And prior to that, I lived near Manhattan. So I was driving home and got to the top of this hill, and I saw this big golden ball in the distance. And I thought, oh, what that could that be? Is that a playing field there? Is that one of those things they put on wires to keep the planes from hitting them? I said, but it's so big. And I, curious person that I am, decided I would go check it out. So instead of turning right like I normally would, I went straight toward where the ball was and stopped at the side of the road, got out of my car and looked at it. And it was, I'd say, about 3 telephone poles high in the air. I wasn't far away from it at all. And it was just hanging there, just glowing, you know, very subtly kind of pulsing this sort of golden glow. And I stared at it, and it sat there, and I just thought, well, what the heck is this? And all of a sudden, it started to move to the right. And when it moved, it pulsed, like it pulsed. And the faster that it moved, the faster the pulsing would be. So I thought, well, that's got to be some kind of propulsion thing. And I thought to myself, well, you know what you're seeing, don't you? This is a UFO. And I was, whoa. I got in my car and screeched out of there and followed it. And it was going quite quickly. And I was barreling down the road following it and madly calling my son, who was at the reunion, if I wanted to tell him what I was seeing. And he wasn't there. I finally got my sister's phone, and she got him on the phone. And I said, UFO, UFO, UFO. And he's like, oh, my God. And he said, well, are you okay? And all that. I said, yeah, I'm fine. I'm following it. He said, what are you following? I said, yeah, I want to. And as I was talking to him, it started to rise very quickly into the sky. And I noticed that there were other orbs, balls up there, higher up. It was joining these 3-4 other orbs high up in the sky. And they were kind of hanging out with each other, kind of twirling around. Some of them had flares coming out of them, like strange, like red flares or yellow flares. And lower down on the horizon, I saw a few more rising up, and there was one that was coming right at me. And I had stopped my car, and I was just standing there with the phone, people screaming in the phone, and I'm just staring at this thing. And I thought, is this going to take me? You know, I didn't know if it was big enough. They seemed to be about, like, I think they were like maybe 5 feet in diameter, maybe a little more, but they weren't that big. And I said, well, how is it going to get me on there? I hope it doesn't take me, you know, and it didn't. It came right at me, and then it rose up to join the other one. And they were just kind of hanging out and careening across the sky, and I was following them. And my son and his cousins and my sister were following us in a van behind me, and I just kept going, kept following them, and they were on the phone. And I said, okay, I'll stop somewhere, and we'll reconnoiter, and we'll discuss this. And as I got closer to the city of Ithaca, which is where I was heading, I could still see them, but they were getting very high up, and the lights of the city were starting to encroach my view. So when I finally got somewhere to stop and I told them where I was looking up and I wasn't seeing anything anymore. And I was, you know, a little disappointed. And they showed up, and we all stared at the sky for a while, hoping to see something. And there was nothing except, you know, planes with their red, blue, and white lights and all that. We knew that they were just planes. There was nothing. But they saw some of it when they were following me. They saw a few of the orbs. They didn't see all 8 of them. They saw like 3 of them. And my son said that he saw a ship, a giant thing that they were kind of going into. I did not see that. But he said that he did see it. And I guess his cousins saw it as well. And again, some of the reactions were excitement. Some of them were like, yeah, you know, no big deal, which surprised me. The next morning, I wanted to report what I had seen. First, I called the police. They're like, dip, we don't handle that stuff. Try the paper. I tried the local paper. No, we're not interested in that kind of thing. And one of my nephews told me that they had done the same thing because they lived right near Watkins Glen. And they said, oh, we see these things all the time. You know, they keep disappearing into the lake. And I'm like, well, does anyone have any curiosity about this? He says, no, we tried reporting it. Nobody wants to know. And then, of course, I, you know, got into my little, I'm a journalist, a writer. I got into my research thing and discovered all of these sightings all over the world. A lot of orbs, a lot of different shaped things, big, small, you name it. And just this lack of interest from governments and police and newspapers. It's like a thing where they just don't want to talk about it. And I ended up writing a novel about it. Well, based on that in the beginning, it became fictionalized. But I mean, it really grabbed me. I mean, that whole experience, the two experiences really kind of molded my direction in terms of my creative life, especially writing this novel, my first novel. I'm a playwright. At least I was a playwright. Now I'm a playwright and playwright novelist. And I'd like to understand what they are. I mean, no one can really explain what are they, where do they come from, what are they doing. I have theories, but you know, everybody's got a theory. And that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
And you're sticking with it, perfect.
Absolutely.
Now, what Watkins Glen, isn't that at the very end of the fork of the river?
It's at the very mouth of Seneca Lake. Seneca Lake is a very long, it's part of the Finger Lakes region. And yes, Watkins Glen is at the very mouth of it. I was driving up along the right side of the lake and then eventually was going to turn right toward Ithaca. So I saw the orb not far from the lake. It was probably maybe a half a mile or less from the lake.
And you know, if nobody wants to accept the reporting, it just simply means that they get so many of these reports.
I don't know. Is that why they don't want it? They just don't want to deal with the volume of it?
Don't want to deal with the paperwork and all that?
Huh. I thought maybe it was more like, we don't talk about that. That's hush hush. But they're just, you know, they, I guess they see them as like a nuisance type thing.
I'd imagine. And also, you know, when you have a spray of sightings, you know, that's going to get a lot of attention, and then the media gets involved, and the media from out of state are going to get involved. It's going to be on the TV, you know, and
Yes. In my research, I actually saw videos that were done of the orbs near the lake, you know, in the same basic area where I had seen them. So they are quite common there. And I guess they're fairly common in upstate New York from the Hudson Valley sightings and all of that. I mean, I have friends. I have one friend who was abducted, and I have other friends who say that their children were abducted and they had implants in their nose they had to take. I'm like, this is a thing, you know. This isn't nonsense. This is happening. So I'm fascinated.
It's definitely a thing, and it's something that's been going on for a long time.
Well, from what I was reading, there have been ancient sightings of orbs, paintings with, you know, ships in them. And, you know, even people are talking about the Bible. I think it's Ezekiel that describes
the wheel.
Spaceship. Yeah, the wheel. And there's just so much that I think it's been going on for a very long time. I don't know what they're doing. I mean, I think maybe we're part alien. Maybe they've been feeding us. Maybe they're the missing link in terms of, I don't know. I mean, because they come down and they take all these, you know, bits out of cattle and things like that. I mean, they're very scientific in what they're doing. I'm sure we're probably very, fairly interesting to them. Maybe like a test tube kind of a thing. I mean, they're clearly much more advanced than we are. Whatever they are, maybe they're us. Maybe they come from another dimension. Who knows where they're coming from? Who knows what they are? I wish I knew. There doesn't seem to be any concrete, you know, data, any concrete answer to what they are.
No, I mean, I've always looked at it like we're a big greenhouse, you know, and we're being kind of, I don't know, maybe cared for. I don't know if that's probably the right expression, but. Yeah, I definitely believe that. And yeah, these accounts go far back into our past, and they're mentioned in so many different religious and historical texts.
Yeah. Yes. And all these artifacts that people are seeing that look like astronauts, you know, these statues or whatever, pieces of art that people create way back that look like astronauts in, you know, astronaut gear. Like, where does it get? I mean, there's got to be something going on a regular basis. I mean, there's just too much of it. It's not just, it frustrates me when there's so many people who go, oh, it's just wavy, gravy, nonsense. It's weather balloons and Japanese lanterns and hoaxes. I'm like, no, you're wrong. you're wrong. But it's very hard to convince people until, you know, some ship, but until it actually comes down and, you know, they walk out and it's on TV, maybe people will believe it. I don't know. But I'm glad you're doing this because it is nice to be able to tell my story without feeling like I'm going to get a certain level of skepticism. You know?
Well, I mean, they actually did fly over DC back in the 50s. And there was a picture. Mm-hmm. They didn't land. And I wonder why. They probably just carried on. They think, not, now's not the time.
Yes, I saw that. They've been all over the place. I mean, you know, I mean, you've seen all these videos of them.
There's many. It's the same with your sighting of the Hudson River. I mean, I think that was 83 to 86.
Yes. Yes, it was in the mid-80s. I wish I could remember exactly the year, but it was in the mid-80s because I hadn't had my son yet, and that was in 88. So it was definitely before that. I've been doing so much reading on it, and I just wish that people would take it more seriously. You know, it seems like you only take it seriously if you've seen one.
The more journalists that come together and report on these things, you know, proper journalists, you know, that are not just going to make a joke out of it and play the X-Files tune or show a picture of a stuffed alien.
Yes, right.
Steer away from that kind of stuff and proper reporting.
I wish I knew more. I knew more about it. I try to learn as much as I can. And I'm glad that you're doing this. And, you know, now that I finished writing the book, I feel like, well, I have to go back now and do the screenplay. And then I have to do that. I don't want to leave the story, you know, even though it's not all about the UFOs, but it starts out like that, and UFOs are running through the whole novel, you know. And it's on my mind. I'm not going to say I'm obsessed, but it's on my mind every day. I think about that orb just sitting there, and I'm standing there looking at it. It was just this strange. It was a connection. I can't, you know, it wasn't talking to me or anything, but I felt like somehow it was connecting with me. I felt close to it, and then it kind of went, okay, I'm going now. And it was just like, wait, no, come back. And I keep hoping to see another one, but it doesn't work that way. You can look at the sky forever. It's just going to show up when you don't least expect it.
That is true. Yeah. I mean, you can go out into your back garden and see some unusual things, but generally these sightings happen when, you know, you least expect it. You know, you're driving down a country road, you know, you're heading somewhere.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
I did think I saw one this last, because we're very remote here in the mountains, this last July 4th holiday, they set off fireworks here by this lake where we live in a ski resort area. And they were very, you know, beautiful fireworks. There was this something, this light that I thought it was a helicopter or something that went close to where the fireworks were in the sky, and then it just stopped and it just sat there. And I thought, I don't hear anything. And it didn't look like anything I could identify. And I thought, is that a UFO? I don't know. I mean, probably not, but I'm sort of conditioned now. Anytime I look up and see something I can't identify, like, is that one? You know, because I'd like to see another one. I would, but it doesn't work like that. I gave up after seeing the first one in the 80s. And I guess that's it for me. And then this showed up. And I'm hoping to see another. You know, I'm not afraid of them. I suppose if I were taken on board and went through what Walton did, I probably would be. But I'm just fascinated. I think they're fascinating. Obviously, you do too, because this is like what you do, you know.
Well, they are fascinating, of course, yeah. There's so much information to learn. Will we get the answers? I think we will one day, you know, hopefully sooner rather than later.
That would be nice. I mean, there's all these little kind of little subtle inferences by various United States presidents about, yeah, you know, they want to, it's beyond their pay grade, or they're kind of coy about it. And yeah, I'd like to know more about it. I mean, they're giving it some level of credibility, but it never really goes anywhere. Maybe we don't know that much about them either. I don't know what the government knows and what it's not telling us. Who knows? Yeah, I'd like to before I die.
Right. I'd imagine they know a lot more than we do. And whenever we do learn little tidbits and stuff, is usually because they want us to know this.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's kind of happening at the minute. I mean, with all the articles that came out of the New York Times and all that, and the videos from the Navy, I mean, that's a good thing. It is stepping stones.
Yes.
The subject's being considered. There's something there, a little bit more credibility to it.
I wish that more people could expand their minds a bit to think about something outside of just their little sphere, you know, because there's a lot. It's like, what is that, Shakespeare? There's more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. I think about that a lot.
That's right.
Yep.
You know, two, three years ago, I would have thought, you know, if they did land and made themselves known publicly, you know,
yeah,
people would be fine with it. You know, people would be okay. But now I'm really not so sure.
Really? Why?
People's emotions and behaviors over the last couple of years, mm-hmm. You know, I think it'd be definitely difficult for people.
Well, yeah.
I can't speak for the whole world, but.
No, there's definitely a lot of turmoil going on. The Hopi have a word for that. World out of balance. I think it's called Koyaanisqatsi. World out of balance. Definitely happening. So yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, I think it's going to be troublesome later on because of, you know, climate change and refugees and areas that are no longer habitable. I think we're heading for some tough stuff. Maybe the aliens should come and rescue us. They do in my book. 60s crazy humans. They're messing things up. They're very smart, so they're probably just, you know, not going to show up anytime soon in any public way. Although they don't seem to mind being seen. I mean, they're seen all the time.
They like being seen. Are they dangerous? I've heard very little evidence to suggest that they're dangerous.
Absolutely not. Look at that Rendlesham Forest thing. Didn't they go and like deactivate the nukes or something? I mean, they're very concerned about nuclear weapons. They're clearly not dangerous. They're probably worried about us blowing ourselves up. You know.
Yeah, I mean, they've done that on countless times. Yeah, I don't think they're dangerous. There's been some situations where people have been scared, and obviously in Travis's situation where he was gone for 5 days.
Yes, and they can be rather rough with the, you know, the investigations that they do on the bodies when they take them aboard. They're not very pleasant. I think there's a certain scientific detachment there, but I think there's also some level of empathy and, you know, caring. Maybe there are different, I mean, there may be different types of aliens. Some may be a little more negative than others. That's been another theory.
That's it. I mean, people trying to express them like the way we are, where we're good and bad. You know, there's good and there's bad people. Of course there is. But like you said, I reckon, yeah, they are detached. They're just doing what they need to do.
Yes. I just would love to know exactly what it is they are trying to do. Clearly interested in this planet. And it's a fascinating planet. Why not? But I just would like to know more about them. So I'm looking forward. Now that I know about your podcast, I'll be definitely listening in because I think you're going to have a lot of very interesting information.
It's the little subtle similarities I find interesting.
So similarities between the stories, you mean a thread that runs through all of them?
Yeah. And you don't always, they don't or you don't really notice them. You know, it's not until you've heard loads and then you find all these little tidbits that seem to connect them all. And that's, you know, and I think that's what it's all about. It's a big puzzle and everyone has a little piece to add.
Yes, it's almost like seeing the elephant from all these different sides, you know. Somebody sees a tail, somebody sees a trunk, but they're all seeing an elephant, you know.
Exactly.
Bits of it, yeah.
And sometimes, you know, the elephant isn't always the right way and you need to keep on turning it around for it to actually make it fit. Uh-huh. If it's an elephant puzzle.
Who knows? They could be earthlings from way back who, you know, the earth fell apart like it tends to do periodically, an asteroid hits it or whatever, and maybe they went up into space and they're coming back. I mean, maybe there were advanced civilizations here before and they're coming back to check us out. Anything is possible. Anything
is possible.
I know. It's cool. I mean, I'm glad. I feel honored that I got to see them. I do. I feel like it was a life-changing, expanding experience.
Now, Eileen, your book, what was it called? Yes. Sorry?
It's called Relativity.
Relativity. And when is it up for release?
That is not been established yet. I just finished writing it recently and I'm working with an editor right now. We're deciding which way we're going to go with it. In terms of they like to like, what genre is it? Is this women's literary fiction? Is it this? Is it that? And I'm like, I wasn't thinking about that when I wrote it. It's hard to categorize, you know. They're trying to figure out what category to put it in and, you know, what's their target audience and all that stuff. So I don't know. It won't be long. I mean, I'll definitely let you know when it's out. It's a ride. It's a wild ride. I enjoyed writing it.
Okay, well, certainly keep an eye out for that, because it's got your sightings in there as well, which is interesting.
Yes. Well, the second sighting is in there, not the first. Well, the first one is mentioned briefly. But I said the first 10 chapters or so are all based on fact. Even this radio program I was on in 11, right after it happened, of the UFO program, there's an actual transcript, word for word, of the actual radio show in it. So, I mean, that's kind of a hook, I think, is that this is actually based on real stuff. And then it becomes more fictionalized as it goes on and becomes a different kind of story. But they're UFOs, images, and at the end, a very large UFO presence in the book. So it's really all based on my fascination with my sightings, you know, and my interest in how much they could really have an effect on our lives. My mother-in-law saw a UFO, and she was friends with Bud Hopkins. And, you know, she actually told him about it. I mean, I know so many people. I mean, you know, what, thousands now of people, tens of thousands maybe, you've been doing this for a while, who have experienced this. I mean, I keep thinking about Close Encounters when these people all get together who saw, you know, had a common vision and they just wanted to understand it. And I understand that. It's nice to be able to congregate with people who've experienced this because you share a common bond.
You do, yeah.
Well, I'm glad to have a chance to talk to you about this. Anyway, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Eileen, I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing that for our listeners.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I look forward to hearing from you.
Okay, you enjoy the rest of the day.
You too.
Take care and keep warm.
You too. Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
That's all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter you would like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page and my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Ethan and Eileen for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe. And keep watching the skies. Goodbye.